You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. How amazing to think about your day, not your diet. Let's create a way to think about your well-being, not your weight. If you'd like to call in and talk with me today, that number is 818-570-5085. 818-570-5085. I would love to hear what's on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, or any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It is not food. The real problem is what's eating at you. Food is actually a solution to the problem. And please, if you want to call in, call me anytime. Don't worry about interrupting me. I want to hear from you. So here's a question from Nicole, not the Nicole that calls every week, but a different Nicole who's a member of the Facebook group. And she says, "Hi, Dr. Nina. I was wondering if you had any tips on how to be less sensitive to others. I know empathy is good, but last Friday I saw a guy barking orders at his service dog in a gruff manner and giving him conflicting commands. Say hello, sit, go, etc., all within a span of 5 seconds. It was clear the dog was getting frustrated and I have to see them again at my job. I was so upset on Friday I couldn't sleep well. I cried in the shower and I've been eating pizza and brownies all week. I tried comforting myself with words, but it didn't help." Well, Nicole, one thing that's really important is if you are having a reaction that is stronger than what you would typically expect, it's not about how to be less sensitive. It's about why are you feeling this sensitive to this particular situation. Because if you're having a really strong feeling to something about something and it kind of perplexes you, you don't really know why you're feeling so intensely, it's for a reason. It means something about that situation is triggering you in some way. So I would say, is there some identification with the dog? I mean, I don't know. Nicole, if you want to write in and you want to share your thoughts based on this, these would be my thoughts. Maybe you're identified with the dog. Maybe you can relate to having someone bark orders at you, maybe a boss, maybe a parent who's telling you what to do and not really listening to you and totally confusing you. Or maybe you have a dog and you imagine what it would be for that, how that dog would feel. Maybe it triggers some helplessness over someone else in your life who might be gruff or commanding or not attuned to you. There seems to be sort of a sense of powerlessness and unfairness. And we can also see clues in the pizza and brownies. So pizza and brownies are filling, right? Those are the kinds of foods that take up space. If you're familiar with my food mood formula, you know that anything that's filling is filling a void, an emptiness of some kind. So think about that. What is the emptiness? What is the missing piece that maybe got triggered by seeing this relationship, this bad relationship with this? Yes, it was a guy and his dog, but it could have triggered feelings about relationships in general. So those would be my things. Those would be my thoughts that, again, if you're having a really strong reaction, you have to recognize where it comes from. It's good to comfort yourself with words, but it doesn't really do the trick unless you can identify what's being triggered and what's being activated. It's like first you say, wow, this is really triggering my, I'll pick something. This is really triggering my feelings about my boss at work and how the boss is just telling me things to do every moment of the day and isn't really listening to me and it feels horrible. Then you say, okay, I get that. Then you can comfort yourself with words. But if you're just trying to say, don't feel this, which comforting yourself with words, I'm extrapolating here, comforting yourself with words sounds like you were just saying, okay, don't feel that. Don't be so sensitive. Something along those lines. Then, of course, it's not going to work. So I hope that helps. Nicole from Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community. By the way, if you want to join the group, it's on Facebook. Just do a search for Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community, and someone will let you in. Here's another question from a group member. She says, I tend to eat past fullness more than I want. Could this mean I'm not getting enough joy in my life? I feel like I eat, sleep, work, wake up, and do it again. Any thoughts? She went on to say, I just tend to keep eating because it tastes so good. Not all the time, but more than I want. Still searching my mind for an answer. Well, the reason she's asking about not getting enough joy is that she's heard me talk about how food can function as fun. If you're not having enough enjoyment in your life, you may be using food for that enjoyment. So that is one thing that may be going on. Now, people tell me all the time they just keep eating because it tastes good. Well, okay, that's the very surface reason. Yeah, it tastes good. But what else is it doing for you? It sounds like she eats, sleeps, works, wakes up and does it again. Doesn't sound like she's having a lot of fun. Sounds kind of monotonous. So it tastes good. What sweetness, what taste is missing from your life? That would be my question. What is it that this eating is doing for you? Also, if you eat past fullness, that could mean many things. Sometimes that means eating until you feel uncomfortable. If you are uncomfortable physically, it could be that you are exchanging physical discomfort for emotional discomfort. So if you eat past fullness and you find yourself feeling uncomfortable or even feeling like you're in pain, what are the uncomfortable feelings? Not the physical sensations, the feelings. And what is it that might be painful? What are the painful feelings, not the physical sensation of pain? That's what you want to be interested in. Okay, another person from the Facebook group says, Sabrina, she says, I'm so busy with work and home, I cannot get the binging under control. I cannot stop it. Is it possible my brain just cannot tolerate anything else? I just want to crawl into bed and think about absolutely nothing. Well, Sabrina, I think there are some clues in here. You're so busy with work and home that eating may be giving you a break. Often, people eat to relax, to calm down, to soothe their bodies and then their minds. And this might be especially true if you find you're eating a lot of carbs that have sort of a sedative effect, that if you're busy all the time, sometimes food is the only thing that slows you down or takes you away from it. Many of my patients, my clients, people tell me that they go into a food coma or they go into the food zone, this zone where they're not thinking, they're not feeling, they're just eating. And so if there's a lot going on at home, if there's a lot going on at work and you're just busy buzzy all the time and just can't shut off your brain and or your mind, I should say. Your brain is the physical organ, your mind is the part of you that thinks and feels, etc. If you just can't shut off your mind and you keep having these thoughts and you're constantly thinking about what you have to do and the list of to-dos is ever growing and you can never get caught up, it's anxiety producing just thinking about it, isn't it? So food can be a solution. It can literally slow you down and help you escape. So what to do instead is to build some more fun into your life, build some balance into your life, make it a priority. From a practical standpoint, I think that when you have a ginormous to-do list, I know I'm guilty of that. I have the ginormous to-do list. But someone gave me some really good advice that I'm going to share with you, and that was pick three things, the top three things that you have to do that day. And they might carry over. You might only do one of them. But you just pick three things off your list and do them rather than look at that giant list, like Santa's list of all the children in the world who need presents. That's what the to-do list can feel like. just pick three and focus on those. And when you break down all of what you have to do into some manageable tasks, and you might not be able to do everything, it will help you have some balance. And when you have balance, you won't use food for a little bit of respite or a little escape or a little bit of fun. So those are my thoughts for Sabrina and Bev and Nicole from the group. And now I invite you to ask me anything, 818-570-5085. Last week we had some issues with the technical issues with the phone lines. So if you tried last week and you couldn't get through, give me a call now. I would love to talk to you. Okay, here is another question from Helena. She is from Scotland, and she had asked me the question I answered a couple of weeks ago about dealing with the inherent restriction embedded in following an autoimmune diet for health. I said, I didn't say her name because she hadn't told me that I could, but she has told me that I may use her name. So Helena writes, now my issue is that 70 to 80% of the time my diet is really on point, but I find myself self-sabotaging the old suspects like chocolate and alcohol. Dr. Nina, what I find myself doing is going 5 to 6 days of eating really well. Then, bam, I reach for the forbidden foods. It's always triggered by life's events. I, like you, do not live in a bubble. So temptation is everywhere. My willpower or rational mind can only go on for so long before I seem to lose control again. Is this just a lack of preparation? Knowing that temptation lurks at every corner, is it really in my own best interest to be prepared at every corner? Well, I think there's a couple of things that I want to say. And Helena, if you ever want to call me, I know you're 8 hours ahead, soon to be 9 hours ahead. Give me a call and let's talk about this, because I'd really like to hear some more details. But if you want to email me back, and I will share it with you and the audience. So there are two themes here. One is temptation, and that has to do with your mindset and willpower. If it's temptation, if it's just, ooh, that looks really good, and I'm just going to tell myself not to have it for 5 or 6 days, and then bam, I have to have it. Of course, willpower never lasts in the long run. If you give yourself permission to have it, even if it's not the best for you, if you give yourself permission to have it, you can choose whether you want it or not. I shared with you, Helena, and with the audience, with all the listeners, that I also struggle with autoimmune issues, and I'm on an autoimmune protocol diet, so I get it about the restriction. But if you have the mindset of, yeah, that looks really good, and I want it, and I miss it, and I haven't eaten it for a year or whatever, it's hard to walk around the world going, oh, that looks so good. But if you say, that stuff looks good, but it is poisonous to me, that may look good, and I miss it, but it's poisonous to me, then it stops looking so good. And you tell yourself, I tell myself, I could have it. I could have some bread. But I know what it's going to do to my body, so I don't. And now I don't really want it, because the idea of having it and then having pain and all the subsequent yuck that goes with eating bread, no, that's not worth it to me. But I give myself permission to have it and choose not to. So when you just, I can't have it, I can't have it, I can't have it, you want it. So Helena, try changing your perspective on these forbidden foods and on temptation. It's not tempting if it's poison. Doesn't look so good if it's poison to you. So that's one thing to remember. The other is, bam, it's always triggered by life events. So what are these life events triggering in you? What emotions are these life events creating? Does it make you stressed? Does it make you scared? Does it make you angry? Whatever the life event that is going on that is causing you to turn to food, then there's a feeling that goes along with that life event. And learning how to respond differently to yourself when you're anxious, when you're angry. And one of the things that especially women do with anger is they tell themselves they shouldn't be angry. They don't have a right to be angry. They haven't earned the right to be angry. And then you know what? They have no problem getting mad at themselves, really, really, really mad at themselves for eating something or for weighing something that they don't want to weigh. So anger can be a huge trigger when we feel helpless. We may feel sad. We may feel angry. If you struggle, and again, I don't know what Helena, what your reaction is to this, to these life events, but if it's anger, you have to allow yourself to express it. Maybe not to the person who's making you mad, or maybe there's a situation that's making you upset and you can't tell anyone how you feel, but you can still express it to yourself. And that's so important, to express it, to feel it, to process it, because as counterintuitive as it sounds, the only way to get rid of feelings is to feel them. And by the way, with anger, especially, this is what I hear a lot. Yes, I'm mad. I'm very mad. I'm very angry. Very angry. Does that sound angry to you? That does not sound angry. That's like an intellectual recognition of a feeling of anger. No, anger, expressing anger sounds like, oh, I'm so upset. Gah. Ugh. Right? It's physical. You have to express it. You can't think your feelings away. You can only express them. Same with anxiety. Same with sadness. You can't intellectually just say, yes, I'm very sad. Mm-hmm. You cry. When you're sad, you cry, or you manifest it in some way, some physical way. Emotions are expressed in a physical way, just like the experience of anxiety is very physical, right? Your heart's beating, you feel nervous in your body. So if you find yourself being triggered by life events, it's really crucial, really important to address the feeling aspect of that. Now, how do you create change in the long run? Thoughts and beliefs lead to feelings, lead to behavior. So if you're only dealing with the behavior, if you're only thinking about the food part of it, then you're not going to get anywhere for long, because the behavior with food, eating, is a solution to the feeling. It is not the problem. The problem is both the thought and belief and the problematic emotion that it is leading to, and then not knowing how to respond to yourself when you feel something. These are the problems. So changing the way you think affects the way you feel, which affects your behavior. If you think, oh, I temptation lurks around every corner and I feel so deprived, you're going to feel the feelings of deprivation, and then you're going to eventually, bam, go and eat. But if you say, you know what, there are a lot of foods that I would like to eat, but they are poisonous to my body. They make me feel bad. They hurt my body. They're physically damaging to me. They make me feel bad, and they make me feel bad about myself. If you say that, then you might feel like regret or something like that, but you might not feel that wish to have them. If you think, I am such a loser, I have no willpower, there's something wrong with me, you're going to feel terrible about yourself. And then you might eat or binge just to get away from your own mean voice. But if you think, huh, you know what? It's not about willpower. I realize that something's eating at me. Something's going on with me. I got to figure that out. I've got to be a detective of the mind and figure out what's going on with me. I'm going to be curious, not critical. Figure out what's happening. And then I'm going to find new ways of responding to myself. That's what I'm going to do. Then how do you feel? Maybe you feel encouraged. If you feel encouraged, are you going to go binge? No. So changing the way you think and the way you think about yourself is crucial. And so is finding a new way to respond to yourself when you feel an uncomfortable, painful, difficult feeling. So specifically to you, Helena, I'd be curious about that bam moment, right? What's going on right before you suddenly want to eat something? Is there a theme to these life events? Remember, everyone, if you are turning to food, it is for a reason. And again, when you're curious, not critical, my favorite expression apparently today, when you're curious, not critical, you're more likely to find the answers. And answers are everything. You cannot fight an invisible army. You just get beaten up. But when you make that army visible, when you make the unconscious conscious, when you can see what you are fighting, then you can fight. You can fight back. Then you win. You can't fight what's hidden from you. All right. A couple of weeks ago, I talked about shame and how it impacts binge eating behavior. And my colleague, Alita Edwards, called in to discuss some ways to deal with shame. And I want to keep the conversation going because a lot of people have written to me and said how pervasive the experience of shame is for them. And here are some tips from a Psychology Today article called Five Ways to Silence Shame. It's by Dr. David Sack. And he says, try these five tips the next time shame comes your way. Shame is among the most corrosive of human emotions, with the power to convince us that that little voice in our head is right after all. You know, the one that says, I knew you'd fail, you'd never really belong, and who would love you? It's both an excruciating feeling and a universal feeling. Rich or poor, overweight or thin, successful or struggling, we all experience shame from time to time, whether we admit it or not, and usually we don't. Shame can shut us down or it can emerge in ways that are destructive to ourselves and to others. It's been linked to addiction, aggression, depression, eating disorders, bullying. Oh, it's the root of all evil. So it's crucial that we learn to deal with it and to build healthy barriers against it. So the next time shame comes your way, consider these steps. Bring shame into the light. Just taking a pause for a second to tell you that one of my patients, after he had been in therapy, and after I was training to become a psychoanalyst, so he did a year of psychoanalysis with me. And afterwards, he said, you know, therapy is like snorkeling. You get a little bit under the surface and you see some interesting things. It's cool. But analysis, he said, analysis is like deep sea diving to the bottom of the ocean where it's pitch black and you've got to shine a light to see anything. And I thought that that was a wonderful analogy because, first of all, you can't go deep sea diving alone. You've got to go with someone. And that's what we need help to change. We need help shining the light in the darkness. We cannot be objective about our subjective experiences. We just can't. That's why to become a psychoanalyst, you've got to be in analysis for a lot of years, as well as doing analysis. You can't know what you can't know. Someone needs to help you. And often it's shameful to even need help. Okay, I digress. Back to the article. Shame and vulnerability researcher and author Brené Brown describes shame as the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. No wonder then the last thing we want to do when gripped by shame is talk about it. If we do, others may discover just how horrible we are. But that is not the best approach. You might have guessed that. The less we talk about shame, the more power it has over our lives, Dr. Brown explains in her book, Daring Greatly. If we cultivate enough awareness about shame to name it and speak to it, we've basically cut it off at the knees. Professor Thomas Scheff, who's a professor of sociology at UC Santa Barbara, he agrees. He says, shame is the most obstructed and hidden emotion and therefore the most destructive. Emotions are like breathing. They cause trouble only when obstructed. Oh my God, that is great. Emotions are like breathing. They cause trouble only when obstructed. So don't obstruct your emotions. Let them go. Wow. I read this, but for some reason, as I'm reading it aloud, that really hit me. Getting beyond shame means acknowledging it and sharing our experiences with the trusted people in our lives, the ones who know we aren't perfect and love us anyway. Their empathy will allow us to keep our sense of shame in perspective, as well as, oh my goodness, someone just tried to call and I didn't see it. So caller, call back. I'm so busy reading my article that I did not see the phone line. So if you get this, if you hear this, please call me back. I'm sorry I did not. Oh. Hi, Nicole. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Nina.
Hi, Nicole.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Dr. Nina, I don't know. Today, I feel like I haven't been, I've been really busy, like with work and social stuff and family and like just social obligations in general. So I haven't really been able to like work out or do my normal workout routine. And I just feel like, I don't want to use the word potato, but I just feel like I don't know. I just feel larger.
Okay.
And it's probably in my head, right?
Yes, it's probably in your head. I just want to share something, which is that when my younger daughter was about 4 or 5, I don't actually remember the age, I think I've shared this with you before, or maybe I just thought about it.
Yeah.
Either way, I'm going to share it again, or for the first time. So she went through this stage where she would only eat white food. And I thought, oh my God, I've got a small child who has like weird disordered eating. How ironic is this? She will only eat white food. Like you had to, she would only eat potatoes.
White.
Potatoes with, you know, potatoes, the inside of a potato. She would only eat bread, white bread with the crust off, and she would only eat rice or toast. And every once in a while, I could get her to have like a little bit of broccoli. So I called the pediatrician and I'm like, oh my God, she's going to be like malnourished and she's going to, it's terrible. She's only eaten white food for like 3 weeks and maybe she's had 4 bites of broccoli. Like what should I do? And he said,
yeah.
He said, it's not going to last forever. And as long as she has some broccoli, she's going to be fine. She'll be healthy. She's not going to do this forever. She's just going through a stage. So she wasn't malnourished, and you haven't gained weight. Remember, keep it in perspective over time. Other thing inherent and embedded in what you're saying is that in order to keep your weight at a certain level, you have to exercise. And actually, that is not true. Exercise is healthy for your body, but it really is the least important element in terms of being at a healthy weight.
Yeah.
What you eat it has much more to do with that.
Right. So, I think that I think I'm craving working out, and I just need to work out, not for the weight loss purpose, but just because of the way it makes me feel. And I think maybe that's what I'm missing more than actually feeling larger or whatever word I used before. I think that's the main thing, is I just miss working out and how that makes me feel. So I gotta get back into doing that. And then it's weird, I like get in the car and I sit in the car, and I don't want to say one of the first things I do, but I just want to share this to get it out. Probably is going to sound crazy, but I'm just going to say it. So I sit in the car and I like will look down at my thighs and be like, oh okay, like, and that will gauge kind of like, that will kind of gauge like, oh okay, I probably like gained a pound or gained 2 pounds, or like how did my
Nicole,
yeah, it's weird.
We're not here to judge. We're here to be curious, not critical.
Yeah.
However, it seems to me that you have an automatic way of turning against your body or feeling fat, quote unquote, or bigger or larger or whatever. You feel that. You don't, or you actually think that. You don't get in touch with what you actually want, need, feel, etc. Now, there's a big difference between feeling larger and wishing you could go to the gym because it feels good.
Yeah.
So if you're turning your thoughts on your body and finding a way to attack your physical self, ask yourself, what is it that, if you couldn't do that, what would be on your mind? How would you express that wish? How would you express what you are feeling or thinking about? And how do those thoughts distract you from other thoughts that you may not want to be thinking about? Larger issues, for example.
Yeah, I tend to do that a lot. That resonates. Going to work, going to think about, I'm thinking about all the work I got to do, and, you know, I kind of work less hours than everybody that I work with, because I do sales for a startup company, but I also have my tax practice, so I work kind of part-time, less hours than everybody else at the startup. So it's like I get in a little bit later, and I kind of have to get everything done that they get done in more hours. So I think I got to do that, and then I have to do tax returns, and then I still want to have time to go to the gym, and then my boyfriend made plans tonight to go out with his mentor, so that's like a social obligation, and I'm like, okay, well, how am I going to have time to do all the work I need to do and get a workout in and have time to, like, shower and do my hair and look presentable at this dinner? So it's like just all that stuff. I'm like, how am I going to squeeze this workout in, because it's really important to me today? And not because of my body, but more because of how it makes me feel mentally. And I just want to feel good.
So you see how different that is than looking at your thighs and judging whether you've gained a pound or not? There's a lot going on. And you may also have some, I don't know, have you met the mentor before? I mean, how do you feel about going out to dinner with your boyfriend and his mentor?
About that part, I just want to make sure that, like, you know, I look my best, and I want to have enough time to get myself together before doing that, you know, because also when my boyfriend first saw me and reached out to me, he was with his mentor, so I just want to make sure that, like, I'm not worried about making a good impression. I'm not.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I have time to work out before. So I'm like, how am I going to go to work, work out, and then make sure I have time to get ready and do my hair and look presentable?
Okay, so that is really what is, say, weighing on you rather than the size of your thighs. Right? So when you find yourself turning against your body, ask yourself, what if you couldn't talk about how you feel, or what you couldn't talk about the size of your body, or whether it's bigger or smaller, what would be on your mind? And then you will find the answer. That's being curious.
Okay. I got it. And what were we talking about last week, Dr. Nina, that we were going to, like, check in about this week? I remember something. We were talking about, I don't know, we talk about so many things. I don't know. I just kind of decided to talk about that because that's kind of what was going on with me today. And I'm like, oh, let me ask Dr. Nina about that.
It was about your hair. It was about whether your hair.
Oh, I cut my hair, but not as short as I. And it's so crazy how, like, in 15 minutes you delved, like, you got so deep with me, and we were able to, like, discover, like, my trauma when I was 10 years old and all that stuff and how I associate short, like, just anyways, that was crazy. I cut it a little bit, and I feel okay. It feels healthy. I feel good.
Good.
Because it all worked out. I feel okay, so thank you for helping me work
through
that.
You're welcome. Well, once you realize that what seemed to be a question in the present is, would you look bigger if you cut your hair, was really about the shame, back to the topic of the day, right? Back to the shame of the past at the age of 10, feeling that sense of shame about your body. So when you could see how the past was affecting the present and have a different perspective, then you could make a decision in the present, just about your hair in the present, without having it be about re-experiencing something really painful from the past.
That's right. Thank you so much, Dr. Nina.
You are very welcome.
Thank you so much. Happy week.
You're very welcome. Have a great week, and remember to be curious and not critical, and see how many times you can catch yourself turning against your body or having, you know, body-centric thoughts. If you can switch those around and say, wait a minute, what would I be thinking of if I were not thinking about my body? What would I be feeling, and what would I be thinking about? What would be on my mind? That would be amazing.
Yeah, but my thighs really did get bigger, though.
Nicole, I have to do this to you. No.
Let's no. Okay. I know, but I'm saying it because I feel like I'm still not over it.
Okay. Well, you call me back next week and tell me what it means, right? Because, but by the way, and say they did get bigger. And?
Yeah. And I gotta go to the gym. And,
And what if they do? What if they did? What does it mean about you?
Nothing. You're right. It's fine. It's just life happening, and I'm just like going with it. And so what? Next week they'll be back to normal.
There you go.
And I don't have to obsess over it and suffer over it. It's just life. Life's happening, and I'm going with it, and I'm enjoying life, and it's just part of the process, and it's not the end of the world. And okay, even if I gained 1 or 2 pounds, whatever, doesn't mean anything about me and who I am as a person.
For that, you get this.
Just myself.
That you get that.
Okay, I feel better.
Okay.
I feel better. Thank you.
You're
okay,
welcome,
bye,
Nicole.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Oh, the ways we torture ourselves. Okay. So I was saying that the way to get beyond shame is to acknowledge it and share it with people that we trust and care about, that we can be our, you know, perfectly imperfect selves, and they can be their perfectly imperfect selves with us. Their empathy will allow us to keep our sense of shame in perspective, as well as help us come up with strategies for dealing with it. So by acknowledging shame, we refuse to let it fester or define us. Dr. Brown says when we bury the story, we forever stay the subject of the story. If we own the story, we get to narrate the ending. And hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
This is Andrea. I've called it before.
I know.
When are you going to
Maui?
April.
You're still going.
First week. I am still going.
I am so happy to hear that.
Yes. I think after I called in, it just gave me like a very, it just gave me perspective, a much needed perspective. So I cannot wait to be on the beach, just relaxing and just enjoying myself.
Well, I love hearing that. How can I help you today? What's going on?
So I had a question about the food mood formula. So I've been reading your book, and I know you talk about like food breakdowns, whether it's like crunchy food or smooth food and things like that. And I think there's one more that I cannot remember.
Filling.
And I know those relate to different emotions, and you know, you could probably describe it a little bit more eloquently than that. But that's how I'm putting it. So is it possible? Because I find myself turning to crunchy food and smooth food. And I know crunchy food, like chips, which is in my case, that has to do with anger. Smooth food, specifically Nutella, is like comfort, nurturing, soothing. Is it like I'm finding myself turning to both?
Yes.
At the same time. Like I will literally be dipping chips in like something.
Yes. That is very, very common. So just for people who have not read the book yet, and she's referring to The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, my food mood formula is if you don't know why you're eating and it just seems like, you know, it's about the food, whatever you're eating gives clues as to what you really need. So smooth and creamy, like Andrea said, is related to a need for comfort. So if those are your go-to, you need to find a way to comfort yourself. Crunchy is associated with anger. So if those are your go-to, find a way to express your anger only nod at yourself for eating chips. And the last category is filling bulky foods.
You know, there you go.
Pizza, pasta, bread, cake, you know, anything that kind of takes up space. And that is about filling a void. So what a lot of people tell me is they'll mix those categories. So there's a primary and a secondary. So I've had people say, well, I can't eat ice cream without nuts in it. Like, that would be crazy. I need the nuts. So that sort of combines both the smooth, creamy comfort and then also a little crunchy. So yes, and you could have all three, but there's usually one that's primary. There's usually one that's more of a go-to than others.
That makes sense. For me, it's the smooth food, I think.
Okay, so for
you... And then I end up, after that, like, for example, Nutella sort of become my go-to. Then I end up feeling, I guess, angry, and that's when I turn to the chips. Because I know I, you know, shouldn't necessarily be binging on that. Like, I know I'm cognizant of the fact that there's more to it.
Okay, but if you don't have the internal resources to be able to soothe yourself in a different way, and many people don't because of our two things, our culture as a whole, our society that says, oh, feelings are weak. Don't feel your feelings. Be strong. Don't feel them. Or shames us for having them. Then how do we learn to comfort ourselves? And if we're in a family, and I don't know, you tell me, if you're in a family where you're not responded to in a way that's comforting and reassuring, then how do you learn to comfort yourself?
And that was going to be my secondary question, because earlier you had said something about letting the feelings go. And I know you talk about feeling your feelings and things like that. And that's something I have a lot of trouble with, because I'm not in a space where I feel like I am able to do that.
Well,
so how does one soothe themselves, or how does one wrap their head around these feelings that, frankly, and I can speak for myself and maybe others as well, I genuinely avoid feeling, because I
bringing it back to the topic today, shame. Because of shame.
Absolutely.
If you're a kid and you have these feelings and you get shamed for it, then having the feeling will make you feel shame.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's not about letting feelings go. It's about the only way to diminish them is to feel them. And if you see a kid, right, if you see a child, you'll see them have like a temper tantrum and then they're fine. They're like, okay, what's in it? What are we doing now? Or they'll cry and they'll cry and they'll cry. And then they're like, okay, what's next? You know, they
like nothing happened
because they've worked through their feelings. And somewhere along the line, we get socialized into, no, don't do that. So of course it's hard to respond to yourself and comfort yourself if you've never been comforted in a way that worked. And that's why in the book I do have strategies. If you look at the VARY formula, the validate, acknowledge, and reassure, you know, yourself, and several other strategies that I share in there to help you respond to yourself in a new way. But you have to come from it from a place of interest rather than disdain. And when you say you shouldn't be having these feelings or you shouldn't be doing this behavior, recognize you're doing it because that's all you know how to do, because it works. And you're going to do it until you don't do it. You're going to do it until
you... It almost feels like a defense mechanism in a way.
Yeah. It's turning to food rather than to people for comfort.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense, actually. And because I know people have let me down in the past or made me feel a certain way or whatever the case may be. So I find myself not being vulnerable and open to these feelings. And it's that's how it feels in every scope of my life lately.
Yes. And you mentioned defense mechanisms, which I think of as protections. Defense mechanisms are really protections. They're just protections that sometimes hurt us. So if you're protecting yourself from the pain of being rejected or disappointed by a person, then you're going to turn to food, which somehow, you know, suggests relationship, because comfort food really means the wish to be comforted. And as you know, in our psyches, food equals relationship unconsciously. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're trying to help yourself avoid shame, but the way that you're doing it also causes problems and causes shame. So if you come from let me be interested in this. Why am I doing this? Not, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Yeah. Yep. Sounds about right. Yeah. I say that a little too often.
Yeah. So, I'm eating ice cream. I'm eating Nutella. That means I must need comfort. Let me look in the book and see what Dr. Nina says about that. Or how would I comfort a friend of mine? How would I comfort someone I care about? Would you say, here, have this Nutella. You're going to feel so much better in a few minutes.
No, I don't. Wouldn't ever say that to anybody.
Never, ever. What would you say?
I'd get them to talk about it and share and give them, you know, a space to be able to share their feelings and express themselves. And I would definitely not recommend turning to Nutella.
So you would talk to them with interest.
And validate them. I would validate those feelings.
Wouldn't it be amazing if you could do that for yourself? Wouldn't it be incredible if you could validate your own feelings? Oh, I'm eating Nutella. That means I need comfort. How am I going to comfort myself? What would I say to someone that I care about? What if someone was talking to me?
Are you saying those things out loud, or is it an internal conversation, or do you recommend writing it down?
I think you find whatever works for you. Personally, I think writing it down is very powerful, but some people feel like, ugh. So some people talk to themselves out loud. Some people, it just, whatever works for you. I personally think writing it is very powerful, but not everyone thinks that way. But yes, mm-hmm. to tease apart like the feeling and the need from the behavior and say, okay, I'm solving my problem in this way that I don't want to do that. I want to give myself something comforting, not
I don't feel like I'm solving anything, because I end up coming back to that same spot.
And, you know, also, I would be wondering if you were responded to with anger.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so then getting mad at yourself instead of being understanding is kind of an identification with the way you were treated.
I sometimes forget to be compassionate to myself.
You sound like you're super compassionate to other people, so you are treating others perhaps the way you would have wanted to be treated, but you are treating yourself the way you were treated.
So it's funny that you say that, because that's actually a perspective and something I intentionally do. I sort of look back on my life and my own experiences and think, I don't know what, you know, all these people are going through, but if I can show up for them in a compassionate way, if I can be there for them in a way that I never had for myself, or I wish I had, maybe it'll make them feel better. Like, I don't want anybody to feel alone or just in the dark. I intentionally do that. So it's interesting that you said that, because I'm the polar opposite to myself.
Yeah. So I want you to set that intention for yourself, to give yourself what you never got, and to be kind to yourself. If you wouldn't say it to a friend or someone you cared about, someone you love, do not say it to yourself. Can you try that for a week and call me back? Let me know how it goes.
I will definitely try that for a week and call you back and let you know how that goes. I will write it down and I will keep tabs, so that when I call back, I'll give you that insight, and I'm going to give the audience insight as well, and see again. Hopefully, again, optimistic. I will set that intention, and we'll see where it goes.
I no pressure, but I have my thoughts are with you, and I have great faith that you will be able to do this.
Thank you. I appreciate this, and thank you for taking the time to chat with me.
You're so welcome. Thank you for calling, and talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Bye. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am so happy to spend this time with you. If you would like some more food for thought, check out my website, Dr. Nina Inc., drninainc.com. Follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Dr. Nina Inc. And be sure to sign up for my free guides and giveaways so you will be the first to know about the exciting things I have coming up. Again, thanks again for joining me. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.